Hi, my name is Russell. I'm an alcoholic member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am an alcoholic. I belong to the South Dixie Group from Miami, Florida. I haven't found necessary to have a drink, nor have I had a drink since January 25th, 1981. Thank you. How y'all doing? You know, it's a blessing. It's such a blessing for me to be here. I'm 71 years old. I've been married. My lovely wife is here. Where is she? Dickie? She's lovely. She's wonderful. Oh, there she is. She's a member of Al-Anon, our Ladies of Perpetual Revenge. Yeah. She can do a great Al-Anon 10-step. When I'm wrong, she promptly admits it. I don't know how you frame it. I'm her qualifier. Every once in a while, I'll go to her conventions, and she's with the other gals in the corner. They're like pointing at me and laughing. And you know, if it wasn't for me, I made her the woman she is today. You know, she's whatever that is. And I'm going to tell you a little bit. It really is a blessing to be here. You know, one of the reasons. You know what? First of all, I want to tell you something. I'm here because I want to be here. It may not seem like much to you, but I used to be at places and wish I was at other places. I used to be at a bar and wish I was at another bar. I used to be at home and I wish I was at a party. I spent my whole life wishing I was someplace else. And the only place, wherever I'm at today, I want to be there. I'm never anywhere I don't want to be. Even if I'm at a place that I have to be, you know, that I don't not like, I decide I want to be here. And I'm pretty much... I don't know what you call that, something about rocketing the fourth dimension of existence. I'm going to talk about outgrowing fear and emotional sobriety and stuff like that. So I don't know with you guys. I've spoken a lot of places, and I've never found any alcoholics that are different or have a different type of alcoholism as I have. I deal with alcoholics that even after they get sober, they're sometimes anxious. They worry about things like money, whether they're married or not married, whether they have romance in their life or they're lonely. They worry about it. Alcoholics worry about a lot of stuff. Did you ever know that? I don't know. Maybe in Arizona it's not like that. They're like a little neurotic and they're scared and they're insecure and, you know, they're up, they're down, they're all over the place. And every once in a while, they're crazy. Alcoholics are crazy. Do you know that? First of all, I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. Let me just tell you something. This is my story. It ain't your story. I'm going to say all sorts of shit. Excuse my language. I'm going to say all sorts of stuff. They've probably heard it before. I'm going to say all sorts of stuff that's going to bother you. So it'll bother somebody because you're alcoholic. Somebody will be bothered. It ain't exactly Well People's Anonymous here, you know. But let me just suggest something to you. I mean, you read the same book I do. Whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause is, something wrong with you. So the bottom line is, if I say something that really hurts your feelings, or you say, who invited that guy? You need to talk to your sponsor. You need to do a four-step. You need to try to figure it out. Because as soon as you figure out why I piss you off, why you don't like me, you know what's going to happen? Number one, you're going to find out that the reason I tick you off is the same reason you get ticked off out there by other people. And once you figure out why I ticked you off and you deal with that, you're never going to be ticked off by people like me again or anybody out there, and you're going to be at peace. And you're going to grow up. And you're going to get rid of that one resentment that's keeping you from being rocked in the fourth dimension of existence. And you're going to grow up. And you're going to get to the point that maybe things won't bother you. And when you get to the point where things won't bother you, then maybe you'll be at peace with yourself. And then you'll have something more than just plain mere sobriety, physical sobriety, which is really just a symptom of the disease. It's a hell of a symptom, but the truth is that's the easiest thing to get rid of. What you really start getting rid of is loneliness. You'll start getting rid of selfishness. Maybe you won't be selfish anymore and thinking about yourself all the time. So I'm here. I'll tell you a little something about an interesting... I don't know. There's strange stuff going on, you know, out there in the spiritual world. I was on a Zoom. I do a three-hour workshop. I love Zoom. I have to tell you that, whether you hate it or love it. I love it. I do about 4 or 5 meetings a day when I used to only do 1 or 2 or 3. Yeah, I used to do 1 or 2 or 3 meetings a day. Now I do 4 or 5. Okay. So I'm 71. My life is over anyway, so it doesn't matter. You know, I got 4 kids that I raised, beautiful kids, and 7 grandkids, and what's the point anyway? So I got nothing better to do than to talk to alcoholics. I love alcoholics. I used to hang out with them all the time when I was drinking. I'm still hanging out with the same crowd. What can I tell you? It's the same deal. So, in any event, so I'm on this meeting this morning, and this guy is like 50 people at the meeting. It's a workshop I do every Saturday. And they go from, you know what I love about Zoom? They come from all over the world. And I'm no longer constrained by the geographics of the deal, where I'm at this meeting because I got to be there because it's 5 blocks away from my house or 2 miles or whatever it is. There are people like from Ireland there and people from Australia there. And, you know, and I know all these people because I've been dealing with them for 7 months. And they know me and we're friends and we're buddies. It's like a group. I don't know. It's like a fellowship. And there's a guy there and he looks just like Sean Connery. And I'm looking at the guy. I said, man, that looks like Sean Connery. And I mean, it wasn't Sean Connery. He looked like Sean Connery. I said to myself, and this is a thought that goes through my mind. I mean, I'm not making this stuff up. The thought goes through my mind because I'm 71 years old. And one of the things that happens, I don't know whether there's any oldsters here, guys who are in their 70s or 80s or 90s, but you get to a point, it's actually a really good thing, where you become conscious of your own mortality. I mean, you know, and not only conscious of it, this gets really weird. This is going to get really esoteric. And you get not only conscious of death, but you actually, this is going to sound strange, but I'm going to talk a little bit about this. You're not scared of it anymore. It doesn't bother you. I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about me. But you think about it, and it actually is a good thing because then you don't have to. If you're dealing, what happens is when I used to walk places, I was always conscious of where I was going. You know, I was wondering about where I was going, and now because of my legs and because of some disabilities and stuff like that, I have to walk real slow, and I might trip. Sometimes I use a cane. And so what happens is, now you may think that's a bad thing, but here's what happens is, so I'm very careful as to where I walk, and I walk very slowly. So I'm very focused on where each step is. You understand? I don't focus much on where I'm going. I focus on exactly where I'm at, which for me is like a good thing. It's like a spiritual thing. I can't explain it. I don't know what it is. Because I don't have to worry about where I'm going or what I'm going to do or stay in the future or any of that stuff. So that kind of thing. So in any event, so this is my experience. You know, my first sponsor told me, I've had four sponsors. You know, they're all temporary. They die on you just like, I mean, they do. I mean, I've had them die on me. Beautiful, wonderful men who I've loved and mentors, an unbelievable thing. And I'll never be able to have enough time to speak about all of them. I have so many stories I could talk about as far as all of them. And of course, I have a sponsor now because there's always a man there for me to take over. All I got to do is ask him. There's always that little fear, you know, is he going to say, sponsor, you? But my first sponsor told me, Russell, when a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will have walked away with an experience. So I know a lot of people say time doesn't mean anything, but let me, you know, people say, you know, guys with like 5 years like to say time doesn't mean anything, or 3 years, time doesn't mean anything. But I'm going to tell you something, time means something. Time means something, because the way we get a new perspective is by repeated humiliations and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. It's not because we're smart. I'm a recovering alcoholic. I'm a recovering smart person. I mean, I'll talk a little bit about that, but when I started getting real stupid, all of a sudden I started getting real happy. You know, I mean, one of the problems with alcoholics is they can stop drinking, but they can't stop thinking. They got that thinking problem. You know, you wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, you're thinking about the money, and you've been thinking about the money for a week. You'd be thinking about what's going to happen to you and what's going to happen when you lose your house and what's going to happen when you lose your car. And you're not even worried about losing your car and your house. You're worried about what people will think about you if you lose your house, what they'll think about you if you lose your car. And then you tell yourself stupid things like, I don't give a shit what the people think about me. You tell yourself that all the time. Alcoholics say stuff like that. They lie to themselves because they're delusional. They'll tell their friends about it. I don't give a crap what they think about me. Hell, you know what I mean? But ultimately, if you grow up and become a man, you realize that people that say they don't give a crap what other people think about them, all they do is think about what other people think about them, because people that really don't give a crap what other people think about them, they say things like pass the salt, but they don't say that crap, you know? And so what happens is, let me put it this way, alcoholics are somewhat confused. I think the first 10 or 15 years in Alcoholics Anonymous I spent learning what the disease was actually about. You know, we walk in here, we think, I thought, this is the truth. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because I couldn't stop drinking. How many people came here because they couldn't stop drinking? Damn, look at that, you know? I swear to God, I looked the guy in the eye and said, I need help, I can't stop drinking. I couldn't stop drinking. That's what I thought the disease was. You know, I mean, I figured, you know, it's what's the organization's called Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, can you blame me? They're saying don't drink even if your ass falls off, you know? They're saying, they're talking about drinking. They're handing out white chips for drinking. No matter what happens, you know, there ain't no problem so bad that a drink can make it worse, you know? And it's just drink. Just don't drink. You'll be okay. And I thought it was drinking. And come to learn that drinking's not even the problem. It's just a symptom. It's just one of the hellacious symptoms that the real problem centers in my mind, not my body. And my sponsor said the first step of getting out of jail is you got to know you're in jail in the first place. After 15, 16 years of drinking, I realized I was in the drinking jail, and I got out of the drinking jail because I became entirely ready to have God remove the drink from me, and so I became ready to do whatever I had to do to stop drinking. And I guess that's very important because nobody's going to do the stuff that we are supposed to do unless they hit bottom and they get to the point where they're willing to do anything because they think their life depends upon it. And I got to that point, that jumping off place, and I did that deal. But then what happens is as you slowly go along, you realize that there's something wrong with you because you're still waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning worrying about the money, and you're still waking up and worrying about this, and things seem to affect you. I told my sponsor, my first sponsor, I'm just to tell you this, they passed away, and I love them, and I respect them, but they're very abusive with me. They were. I just want to point that out. I love them. I give them a lot of credence, but they didn't treat me nicely. And you know what happened is it affected me because abused children become abusers themselves. You understand what I'm saying? As a matter of fact, at my age, at almost 40 years sobriety, the only fun I have anymore is abusing my sponsees. That's the only... I like the grand sponsees. I don't like the sponsees that much, you know. The way I approach sponsorship is one of us is going to drink and it ain't going to be me. You know what I mean? So you come up to me and say, I think I'm going to drink. I said, go to it. Have a great time. I got things I got to do, you know. And alcoholics are weird. Then they refuse to drink because they won't give me the pleasure, you know. I mean, what kind of sponsor are you, you know, and they wake me up at 3 o'clock in the morning. He says, I'm going to kill myself. I said, why are you waking me up? I could have read about this in the paper. You know, what do I need this crap for? You know. So, you know, I mean, alcoholics, we see through a glass darkly. You know, I mean, we come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and for, you know, all we do is get repeatedly crushed. 90% of the time, it's for the same thing. It's for the same exact thing over and over and over again. And finally, after 15,000 inventories and talking about it in groups and everything like that, and people are telling us what to do, we don't understand that. And, you know, all that sort of stuff. I told one guy I hated my boss this. I spent a year talking about my boss and what an idiot my boss was and how bad my boss was. And some guy came up to me and he said to me, this is what he said to me. He says, you know, I got the solution to your problem. You got the solution? He says, absolutely. He says, I have the same problem. He said, well, what'd you do? He says, I got another job. And I said, this is a guy who just doesn't understand. Because I'm not, who's going to hire me? You know, nobody's going to hire me. And then I'm going to have to go out. And what if he finds out? And everything like that. And blah, blah, blah. Because I wasn't ready to, I didn't want to get another job. Because it was scary. What would happen? And nobody would hire me. And I needed the money and everything like that. And he didn't understand. And what I didn't understand is that I suffered from something called fear. 3 years later, the fear went away, and I said, I ain't staying here anymore. I'm going to go out and hang my own shingle. I'm a lawyer. I'm just going to make my own money because I was ready to do it because my boss wasn't going to change. I had to change, and I changed. It took me 3 years to do it because that's the kind of thing, that's what works in Alcoholics Anonymous. Things take time. That's why repeated humiliations over a period, that's why time is important, because every time I have a repeated humiliation and every time I get crushed, I should have figured this out because I'm a pretty bright guy when I first came in, that this was all about being crushed and surrender. I mean, Dr. Bob and the good old timers, you know, you can go to a meeting unless you got on your knees and gave your life to God. They called that the surrender. They'd go upstairs and you'd give your life to God in front of a bunch of people and they'd say, we had a real surrender. It's all about surrendering. Surrendering the romance, surrendering the sex, surrendering the money, surrendering the envy. Surrendering the pride, surrendering the right to be right, It's all about, it's all surrendering, worrying about what other people think about you. It's all about surrendering a crazy, crazy mind that's so warped that nothing can help it except God. Surrendering the fact that you don't want to believe in God. Surrendering the fact that you don't like people that talk about God. Surrender the fact that you have a book that all it does is say, see to it your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. Surrendering the fact that you have a book that says the selfishness, self-centeredness, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, we step on the toes of others, they retaliate. That's the real disease, seemingly without provocation. We learn we've made decisions based upon our selfishness that puts us in a position to be hard. We're self-aware and right, but we don't even think so. Above everything, we must get rid of the selfishness. That's the problem. That's the insanity. And we don't even know what it is because we think we're pretty nice people. And it says there is no, and it says, and then it says this. It says we must get rid of the selfishness. God can do that for us. Not the third step, not the fifth step, not the 18th step, not the best fourth step. It says God will do that for us. Seems there's no other way of doing it. And then later on the next page, what does it say? It says once you make a sincere decision, of course, in the chapter of the solution, it says even it says it even differently. It says you can be rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence. You can experience much of heaven. But the great fact is this and nothing less, that God has become the central fact of your life. You've got to be convinced that he lives in your hearts and minds in a way which is miraculous. He's doing for you what you can't do for yourself. And I did the third step when I was about 3 or 4 months sober. I got on my knees. I did the third step because I didn't want to drink. And I knew I had to do it. And my sponsor told me to do it. And I did it, but I wasn't convinced. And I know I wasn't convinced. If I was convinced, I'd never be worried again. And I worried for 15, 20 years until I stopped worrying. Because I became convinced. And I stopped turning things. I used to turn things over, turn it over. It would take a week to turn it over, turn it over. I'm turning over my wife. I'm turning over my mother. I'm turning over this. I'm turning over the job. I'm turning over this and turning over that. And it might take me 3 days or 4 days or maybe go down to an hour or maybe 5 minutes and everything. And then one day I woke up and I realized I woke up. By that time I was going to church because the big book encouraged it and I was going to a lot of AA meetings, and I was reading a lot of books besides the big book, the Bible. I was doing a lot of stuff. You don't have to do it. Don't get nervous. You know, I'm just telling you my story. I'm not here. My God doesn't allow me to impose my religion on anybody or my beliefs on anybody. But I'll tell you what the big book tells me to do when it says my story is exposed in a general way. What the big book encourages me to do when I'm is I have to expose myself. I have to expose myself to other people. You know, because there may be actually people in the audience that are actually looking to see how can I find God and who is God. And somebody may want what I have. And they say, I remember that guy. I like what he was talking about. I wonder what he was talking about. There may be somebody out there that might be interested. People that aren't interested, I'm not going to worry about it anyway. There's probably somebody out there that hates me, you know. That's okay. They're alcoholics. You got to let go of that stuff, too. You got to surrender that stuff, you know. They're the same guy 7 years down the road. You say, you know, I used to hate you. Now I love you, you know. And because they got to be repeated humiliations. They got to get crushed, you know, and that's the deal because all I'm doing is planting seeds now anyway. So I'm sitting here in my, and that's, what does it say? It says, we make a sincere decision for God. It says, all sorts of remarkable things happen. Being all powerful, he'll give us everything we need if we stay close to him and perform his work well. And his work is very clear. His work is to be a maximum service to other people. That's what his work is. You have a new employer. I have guys that they will skip their children's, they'll skip their children's graduation because their employer says you have to work. I have guys that will do backflips, will hurt other people, will skip out on all sorts of important things because their boss says they got to do something because he's paying them and they don't want to lose the job. That's their earthly employer. The big book says I have a new employer. And I have other people that will make all sorts of excuses not to do what their other employer says to do. I wonder what my life would be like, what your life would be like if you treated God as your employer the same way you treat your earthly boss as your employer. I wonder if you'd be rocking in the fourth dimension of existence. I guess there's two doors in AA, don't you think? There's the not drinking door that everybody lines up after. And they just don't drink and they don't drink. You know, they say in the big book, here and there once in a while, a drinker being dry at the moment, says feel better, look better, having a better time. He says we smile, such fancy. We know he's going to try the old game again because he's not happy with his sobriety. Soon to know loneliness, a few do. Do you think there are people, maybe even here, that have 25 years that are lonely? Think there are people that are sober 25, 30, maybe 40 years that are not happy with their sobriety? I know there are because I sponsor them. I sponsor guys with 25, 30 years, 35 years that aren't happy. They seek me out. I talk to them. We do workshops. You know, it's a terrible thing. You know, it's a terrible thing is to miss the whole deal. To go to the banquet, the A banquet, where they're serving lobster and, you know, all sorts of, you know, prime rib and everything, walk out with a ham sandwich. You know, because you never wanted to jump in the deep end of the pool. You know what I mean? You never really wanted to do this thing. You did the program the way I want to do the program. You're going to do everything they say in the book. You know, I mean, what did they say in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers? The books that we found absolutely essential. Anybody ever heard the word essential? Do me a favor. Say the word essential. Essential means essential, right? How about absolutely essential? You think that's like real big? You know, real big. Here's Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, conference-approved material that if you really want more and you want to increase your relationship with God, you might want to read. Because we have a book that says, Rarely Have We Seen a Person Fail, that has thoroughly followed our path. Anybody ever read that? Thoroughly. Don't you hate words like that? Thoroughly, utterly, utterly give yourself to God, thoroughly give yourself to God. You know, thoroughly, utterly. What is that? Half measures avail us nothing? Half measures, is that true? Do half measures avail us nothing? Isn't that crazy? I pretty much think, in my thinking, which my sponsor told me to have a healthy disrespect for, I pretty much think half measures give me like 50%. Yeah, I mean, I'm not drinking, aren't I? And isn't that the whole thing? Doesn't say half measures avail. There is no middle-of-the-road solution. I'm a middle-of-the-road kind of guy. I'm not going to get crazy on this stuff. And I read this book, you know, about these men, and they say in the big book about, in the Doc Vaughn Good Old Times, he says, the books that we found, rarely have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our path. And that book was written in, what, 1939. And A was started in 1935, right? Let me see. Let me do the math. 1939, So for 4 years, the guys that wrote a book and says, Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And the one thing we know they didn't do is they didn't read the big book. Did they? No, they didn't. But if you read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, they say the books we found absolutely essential are 1 Corinthians 13, Sermon on the Mount, and the book of James. We were almost called the James Club. When I started reading those books and studying them, the big book went from black and white to technicolor. That's not maybe your game, because that's not you, because you're going to do your program. You do your program, and I'll do my program. You know what I mean? And don't start telling me what to do. I'm just telling you, hey, listen, you can tell it your own opinion. I'm telling it your own facts. I'm just telling you what it said in those guys who wrote, Rarely Have Seen the Person Fail, Thoroughly Followed Our Path. I'm just telling you what they said. Just telling you, you know, maybe one day when you got 25 years and you're not happy with your life and, you know, things aren't working out the way you want them to work out or something like that, maybe you'll start thinking. I remember that guy, Russell, from Miami, he was talking about all this crap, and I wasn't going to do it, and it was all bullshit. Maybe if I had done, maybe I ought to surrender, because I'm tired of being crushed. Maybe I need to do more. I don't know. I'm getting off the subject. I'm sorry. You know, I got to apologize. I have a, you know, when you should have heard me 15 years ago. I used to talk about what it was like, what happened, what it's like now, and I've been doing just so many step series and teaches and everything, like, get off on this stupid stuff, and I apologize to you. So in any event, here's the deal. Let me do this, like, real fast, the drinking thing. You're going to have to trust me. I'm a drunk. But let me tell you, you see, this disease is about insanity. We have a step called the second step, don't we? I mean, in Arizona, do they have the second step? Now, there's a second step. Correct me if I'm wrong. Does it say, what does it say? Came to believe, thank you, that, because I got Alzheimer's. No, it's true. My wife had me tested for senility. Because she's upset. She thinks there's something wrong with me because there's a lot of things that happen that she gets upset about, and I don't seem to get upset. And so I think there's just something wrong with me. Because, now, personally, I have been tested. But I do think, in all honesty, I should tell you that I was tested for senility, just in case you decide you're going to rely on something I said. So, in any event, so I was tested, but they cleared me. But what happens is, when you get sober, and I think when you get emotionally sober, you know, Bill Wilson said, that's the next frontier. And he says, the real disease is unhealthy dependencies. In the Bible, they would call it idolatry. That would mean worship the things of this world. Following the things of this world, worrying about the things of this world, you know what I mean? So what I think what happens is when you get emotionally sober and the things of this world and the circumstances, you develop something called equanimity, which if you look it up means, that's my third sponsor used to talk about equanimity all the time. He said you get to a point in your life where your inner peace and who you are and what you are never depends upon your outward circumstances. And so what it essentially talks about is it talks about a man who, even during tough times, remains calm on the inside, which if you know anything about alcoholics, if you ever sponsor people, is the exact opposite of the way we are. You know, I mean, but that's some sort of spiritual thing that happens when you start believing in God and allowing the Holy Spirit to come into your life and you join the fellowship of the Spirit, because the way Dr. Young explains it, says ideas, emotions, attitudes that are the guiding forces of these men's lives are pushed to one side and become dominated by a whole new set of ideas, emotions, and attitudes. So, you know, you no longer have to turn things over to God. You just live a turned-over life. You see, you learn to turn over life, and you don't work the steps anymore because you just live the steps. Because what used to be really weird and strange and used to force yourself, oh, I think I did a 10-step. Oh, I think I did a 4-step. Oh, I did a 3rd step yesterday. Oh, that was a 6-step. Oh, I did a 7-step. What happens is you stop. It stops becoming obvious that you're doing the steps because you're just living your life. You just live that way because that's the way you are. So I'm at home, and it was so about 8 months ago, they asked me to do this thing, and I said, sure. I said it because my sponsor, when I first came in, he said, you never turn down anybody when they ask you to do anything in AA. So I've done every job, everything, whatever it is, I've done all that stuff. Because the big book says I got to be a maximum service and I got to be like the Good Samaritan, and I've read all about the Good Samaritan. And I even read it like I know why they put it in there, because I even read the book of Luke and I read the actual Good Samaritan and I understand what that's all about. And I think what happens is when God comes into your life and you focus on God and he becomes the central fact of your life, you don't have to be the Good Samaritan. You just turn into the Good Samaritan. And what happens is it gets kind of crazy, because what happens is you actually start helping people all the time anyway, because you get more pleasure out of helping people than chasing after women in bars. And I put in a lot of effort as a lounge list to chasing after women. Let me tell you something, I was motivated. I wanted what they had, and I was willing to go to any length to get it. And the bottom line is, when you get to the point in your life where you would rather go, you're not only going to meetings because you need meetings, because we all need meetings, you're going to meetings because there may be somebody there you can help. And so you're listening intently to anything anybody says, because that's your life, and you've turned into that. You know, how pathetic, you know? And I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. Am I making any sense? So in any event, so I said, so what happened was 7 months ago, I said, yeah, I'll do this thing. I'll come out here and I'll do this thing. And what happened then, the COVID thing hit. So every 2 months or so, I'd speak to Jan, and he'd say, well, you're still going to do it? I said, yeah, I'm going to do it. And as I said, I'm 71 years old. I have a lung problem. You know, I got 4, you know, kids, 7 grandkids. They all worry about me, my wife, and what happened is, so about a month ago, and you know, and I'm saying, well, it's Arizona, it's in the desert, nobody gets it in the desert, you know, that kind of deal, and then it came on the news that it was spiking out here. I said, oh, right, it's spiking. So a thought came on to me. A thought came on to me that maybe about 30 days ago, and I think my wife, you know, the Al-Anon, might have mentioned something to me. It's possible. I'm not blaming her. Somebody might have. You have a lot of people coming up to you and say, "You're really going out there? You're really going to with the COVID thing and everything?" And so a thought came on to me. He says, "Well, maybe that's stupid. Maybe I shouldn't go out there." You know, here's the crazy thing. I mean, I'm just telling you the truth. You know, They say to give a good AA talk, all you have to do is be sincere, and once you learn how to fake that, you got it made. But the, what I find is that what really is really do a good AA talk is just tell people the truth. You tell people the truth, no matter how crazy it is, five people come up and say, hey, you're talking about me. You know what I mean? It's because, you know, we're all like twins, you know? Black, white, you know, rich, poor, you know, big, fat. I don't care. We're all twins, so. So this thought comes to me, you know, maybe I should, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm thinking about my sponsor. You always say, yeah, you know. But you know something? I was never confused as to what I was going to do. And the reason I was never confused, and this is the truth, and this is the reason I'm here, is because even though I know that thought came up from my mind, because I have an alcoholic mind and thoughts like that come up, here's what happened. I knew the Lord wanted me to be here. I knew that God wanted me to be here because the big book says, he says, never hesitate to go to the most sordid places. Not that this is sordid. Because I know the big book says, be on the fiery line of life, go wherever you got to go. And I went wherever I had to go, to the detoxes, everything like that. And the God will protect you while you're doing it. And I knew that, so I was never confused by my alcoholic thoughts, even though I have that insanity to a certain extent, and it's been mitigated. And I know I'm insane because the second step, you guys do the second step, right? It says, came to believe that higher power would restore you to sanity. So listen, I know they don't say, you know what I like about the big book? Really, it's so gentle. You know, even when they say, here's the thing, the big book, you gotta understand, this is terrible what I do. I take these right turns and I forget what I was gonna say. Like the big book says, selfishness, self-centeredness, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, you know, and everything, you know, we step on the toes of others, they retaliate, seemingly, but you know, all that stuff that I just said, right? So it almost sounds poetic. It almost sounds like, hey, that sounds great, you know what I mean? And my sponsor said, when I said, well, what does that mean? He says, that means you don't give a shit about anybody except yourself. He says, that doesn't sound good. That's why I told my sponsor, I said, I'm sensitive. He says, no, Russell, great artist is sensitive. You're just touchy. You know, it's a big difference, you know, And I was talking about something else. I can't remember what I was talking about now. You see, I should keep my train of thought and that kind of thing. And so that's the I usually have a bookmark. And they say, this is what you were talking about before you skipped over to that other thing, you know. So that's that deal. So here's the deal. It says it'll restore you to sanity. So here's the deal. Because I'm a lawyer, I'm a wordsmith. So I was learned to have a healthy disrespect for my own thinking. But I still can figure this. If the second step will restore you to sanity, you have to be insane. You got to be insane. So it doesn't say you're insane. And God will restore you to sanity, it says, came to believe. So it's not like you think that there's something wrong with you or anything, you know what I mean? Even though it's like, you can go on thinking that you're okay, you know what I mean? And, you know, 7 years sober, you want to put a muzzle of a gun and blow your brains out. You say, what's wrong with you? You know, they call me, you're insane. You know, it's okay, you know. That's okay. It's all going to work out. So in 20 or 25 years, that's what I tell my sponsors. Oh, that thing, the fear thing. Oh, yeah. Don't worry, you'll be okay in 20 years. Just hang in there. Be okay, you know. Everybody goes through that. You got to be crushed. Wait, crushed. You got to go through that step, first step, over and over again. Unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious. Of true happiness, will find none at all. You got to accept how crazy you are, and you don't even know how crazy you are. You walk into AA thinking you're okay because you haven't had a drink in 6 months or 6 years, and you walk in with like a little flashlight, just to see how big the cage is. You know what I mean? And you know, you got the sex cage, you got the money cage, you got the why don't they love me cage, you got why won't they accept me cage, you got to say what do they think about me cage. You got stuff laid out. I go up to my one of my mentors, Ray O'Keefe. You know, I say, 9 years sober, you know, I'm a high earner, I'm broke, why am I broke? You know, my sponsor said, well, when you spend more money than you make, you go into something called debt. I said, I didn't understand that stuff. You know what I mean? He says, I got the solution for you. Earn more or spend less. I said, what does that mean? You know what I mean? I said, I'm earning as much as I can. I can't spend any less. He said, simplify your life. I know what that means. Simplify your life. Get rid of the Mercedes. I know what that means. Simplify your life. He says, yeah, simplify your life. That ain't going to happen. I get rid of the car, you know. I mean, what will people think? Not that I give a shit, you know what I mean? What do they think? What do they think about me? You know what I mean? Oh, by the way, you know what that is? That's alcoholism. That's the real alcohol. That's the real alcoholism, boy. Drinking, that's bullshit. You know what I mean? That's. Let me tell you something. Everybody stops drinking, or they die. Or they die drunk. You know? Everybody comes in, stops. They stop drinking for a week, for a month, you know, 3 months, whatever it is, 10 years, 15 years, or they die or whatever it is. But you know something? That stop. You know something? If they drink again, you know why they drink again? Because they haven't been able to stop thinking. That's the real disease. If they drink again, they're drinking over the car, they're drinking over the house, they're drinking over the wife, they're drinking over the jealousy, they're drinking over the loneliness, they're drinking over the... They're not drinking over the drink. Listen, the craving happens when you take your first drink. You understand? Then the craving gets set up. You know what I mean? You don't take your first drink and you drink. It's not because of the craving. It's because you're insane again, because you haven't been working on the real deal, because you haven't accepted the real program, and because you aren't kneeling and giving your life to God and making him the focus of your life. And instead, you're sitting in meetings and you're not even talking about it because you're scared that other people will get mad at you. You understand? And when you have a fellowship where the entire big book and everything about it is devoting yourself to God in every paragraph, and you got a crazy fellowship where most people don't want to do that, except maybe a couple of old timers, they might not even be around, so that you sit there and you want to talk about what God is doing for your life or ask questions, but you shut up because you're scared, because you're worried about what people in this fellowship reading those books will think about you. That's one crazy son of a bitch thing, I got to tell you. So let me tell you, here's the deal. You know why I can talk like this? Because I'm not scared of y'all. And you know something? I'm not even worried about your opinion of me. I have one individual, one... I worry about what God thinks about me. Bill Wilson in Alcoholics Anonymous number 3. Bill Dotson, you know, the man on the bed. You ever see that thing, the sign of man? They got Bill and Bob... And there's the guy in the bed with the funny t-shirt. And they're reading from the Bible. That's what they're reading from. Because that's what they had for the first 4 years. And it's called Came to Believe, by the way. Yeah. So what happens is, you lose the fear. And what you're concerned about more than what people think about you, is concerned about what the God of your understanding thinks about you. And what Bill Wilson said, when Bill Dotson said, I knew there was something more. You know, you look it up in the book, I'm not lying to you. He says, I knew there was something more, something I hadn't got, some sort of release that I thought a person ought to have. And I was trying to find the answer. Bill was in my house, it was in the afternoon, we were eating a sandwich, and he was talking to my wife, Henrietta. And I heard Bill say this, Henrietta, the Lord's been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I got to keep talking about and telling other people. I got to keep talking about and telling. I can't help myself from talking about and telling other people. And he says, I heard that. I call that the golden text. He said, Bill was very, very grateful for his sobriety. He gave all credit to God. And all you do is think about God. You know, that's the deal. And you know, what kind of person would I be when I was a guy who was lifted from the muck of alcoholism? One evil son of a gun who only gave a shit about myself and put in a place where I could help other people, rocket into the fourth dimension of existence if I was embarrassed to talk about God. Now, I can understand why somebody with 1 year's... Hey, don't you try this at home. I'm a professional, you know what I mean? I can understand. I'm not saying, hey, I heard Russell. I'm going to go in my group and I'm telling them, hey, they got to do this. And No. But if I don't talk about what God has done for me... As a matter of fact, there's another quote in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers where Bill himself, because believe it or not, Bill was an alcoholic. As much as I love him, guess what? He's not my higher power. Bill's not. Bob's not. Alcoholics Anonymous is not. You know, the trustees are not my higher power. You know, I mean, that's all man stuff, you know. And I'm one of these guys. I need the highest power because my problems are just that big, you know. And let me tell you something. I need the power that will overcome death. Fear of death. That's the kind of power I need. That's the deal I'm looking for, you know. And he's come through to me because God will always appear if you want him enough. You know, that's the deal. So one day, I don't know, I'm probably past the hour already. So one day I'm going out with some gal. I'm in love. Alky love. You ever been in Alky love? Oh, my God. She's gorgeous. I'm gorgeous. I'm young. I'm like 18 years old. And oh, there's a lot of sex, you know what I mean? And And one day, this is the woman I love. This is the woman I love. One day she says to me, we've been going out at the University of Miami for like a year. Every day I'm either with her or I'm thinking about her, worrying about her, does she really love me, jealousy, you know, all that stuff. And she says to me, she says, you know, my parents haven't seen me in a year and they want me to spend Christmas with them, fly up there, spend the week Christmas with them. And I look at her and I say this to the woman I love. I said, well, what about me? I said, what about me? You guys probably, yeah, you don't know what it's like. I said, what about me? I mean, you're going to be up there on Christmas, and we have this big blowout argument because I'm going to be here alone, and she's going to be up there. I know she's got a boyfriend up there. I know she's going to be going to bed with him. I know what's going on. I'm not stupid, you know what I mean? And she says, well, I got to go. And so she goes up to New York, the woman I love, and, you know, I'm sitting around drinking and worrying about her, and I have an idea. There's a credit card I haven't maxed out, you know what I mean? Because I'm a guy. I spend money I don't have, buying shit I don't need to impress people I don't like, you know what I mean? I just do that stuff all the time. If you haven't walked in here with a huge credit card balance and have cards taken away from you, it's just because you never qualified for one. But in any event, the bottom line is, I'm not saying, there's different people in here. Some people are Scrooges. But amen. So in any event, so I have an idea, a brainstorm. And Alcoholic Brain says, I will surprise her. I will fly up there and on Christmas Day, you know what I mean? I come to the door. I knock on the door. Hi, it's me to ruin your Christmas. You know what I mean? It says, well, I called it love. The cops called it stalking. But what do they know? You know what I mean? What do they know? Now listen, you know what that is, by the way? Let me tell you what that is. That's alcoholism. That's selfishness. That's what selfishness looks like. So I marry some gal. I see some gal. I'm an if only, if you're an alcoholic, you're an if only, you're an yes. Oh, if only I had that gal. If only I had that car. If only I had that money. If only I had that job. If only. I run after. I chase after that only. I kill you. I worry about why I don't have that. And everything. I'll do anything to get that thing. And then I get it. And I'm okay for like a week. And then, no, if only I had this. If I had a newer car or something like that. And so I chase after this girl. I do whatever I can to get this girl. I get this girl. I get her to marry me. We have a kid. You know what I mean? I move to Miami Beach. I'm in a beautiful house. I'm on golf course. I become a division chief in the state's attorney's office. I'm trying murder cases. Everything's okay. And, you know, like, a year later, I'm in a bar looking at women till 4 o'clock in the morning. My wife's at home with a baby because, you know, it wasn't working anymore. You know what I mean? You know, sometimes you get tired. You know, we're different people. Maybe we got married too young. You know, I mean, you know, maybe that's what I told myself. I never cheated physically on my wife. Never cheated on my physically on my wife. Never did that. You know, I just sat in the bar till 4 o'clock in the morning and started thinking about cheating on her and saying, why can't I cheat? Why? If I only had that, oh man, if I only had that redhead, if I only had that blonde, I'd get it at 4 o'clock in the morning. And then one day, because she had, you ever buy a new car and you love it and you feel great? Because you know what the problem is? I'm an alcoholic. It's no job, no amount of money, no woman, no suit of clothes ever made me feel so good just as fast and so fast as a couple of drinks of booze. And if alcohol did for me what it did for me when I was 18 years old, I'd still be drinking, but it stopped working for me, so I don't drink. And the sad news about my life is it stopped working for me about 10 years before I realized it stopped working for me, and I hurt a lot of people. But you know what I learned after I stopped drinking? That women do that for me, too. That cars do that for me, too. That money does that for me, too. That applause does that for me, too. That this world and the things of the world do that for me, too. And I run after them the same way I ran after the alcohol, and I have the same results. And so all I can tell you is if you've ever had a new car and you love the new car and it makes you feel like you're really something, because one of the problems I found out with what was said in the book Man Against Himself in 1932, that alcoholics and men and women are out to destroy themselves, that we actually think we're pieces of crap, which is why when you're in the shower lathering yourself up, or you're in the car, all of a sudden you'll hear this voice, and the voice says, you're an asshole, you ought to kill yourself, you're never going to be okay. That sort of muzak that alcoholics play themselves all the time, and they sort of like turn on the TV or the radio, or they look around and do something, they sort of like push it away, you know what I mean? And they say, well, they look around, who said that to me? I'm the only one in the car, because that's your opinion about you with you. That's your reputation with you about you, that you're no good, you're not good enough, you're never going to be good enough. I'm a nothing, I'm always going to be a nothing, I've never been anything but a nothing. I used to put something in my tummy called scotch, it may be into an almost. When you're a nothing, almost is top of the world. You'll settle for that. And sometimes women will do that for you, and cars will do that for you, and money will do that for you. And it's just as horrible as the drinking, because it keeps you away from true happiness. But the problem is the whole world is doing it, and it's all on TV, and everybody's telling you to do it 24/7, so you don't even realize it's a problem. So the drinking, which is easy because it becomes a problem, because the wheels fall off, the other stuff, you could just be miserable for your entire life and die and never even realize that your real problem is you suffer from worldaholism. Thingaholism. Womenaholism, menaholism, relationshipaholism. And you don't even want to listen to guys like me because what if I'm right? Then, oh man, that'd be crappy, you know. I came here for alcohol, you know. Well, this is kindergarten. What do they call it? Spiritual kindergarten? Yeah, but some of us want to go to high school, you know what I mean? We'd like to grow up, you know, and become the men instead of the boys. That's the sixth step, you know. And so finally I leave that woman. I leave that wife because we're growing in different directions. She doesn't understand me and I don't understand her and blah, blah, blah. And I leave that child. Oh, no, I did all the right thing. I paid my child support and everything like that. You know why? Because she became like the used car. New cars are nice, but she was like a used car. You know, does that sound horrible? Does that sound horrible? Well, you want to know something? I was a horrible person. I was an evil person. I don't delude myself in things, well, I'm basically a nice boy. Just because I wear a three-piece suit and I'm an attorney, I'm prosecuting people, and I look okay and everything, I know what selfishness is all about. I've learned over a period of years what selfishness is all about. I need to embrace how selfish and evil I was so I can have the same reverence for God, so I know what he did to me and for me, so I can be forever grateful to him. Because if I just think I was just pretty much a fairly nice guy, not selfish. I didn't really want to hurt anybody. I'm okay. And God helped me with the booze, but otherwise I'm great. I am missing the entire deal. And one day I'll think I'm just so good because I'm not drinking for 40 years or something like that. I'll start forgetting about what this disease is all about, and it's cunning, baffling, and powerful. So I come into Alcoholics Anonymous. On December 25th, 1980, having been kicked out of a Christmas party, Noche Buena, I'm alone in my house. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm 31 years old, and my life is over. And I know it's never going to get better again, and I can't stop drinking. And some preacher comes on the TV set, and he said, if you want to change your life, and he gives a little testimony, he says, let God come into your life, and I hit my knees, I say the sinner's prayer, and I invite Jesus into my life, and which is not a big deal maybe for this crowd, but for a Jewish kid from Long Island, New York, it was a big deal. You had to be there, you know? My sponsor said you can't rob an alcoholic of his desperation, you know? Every alcoholic has his last strength. If you haven't been to that place where you'll do anything, you know, try anything. And I didn't think anything happened after that, but after 30 days, I had my last drink. Then I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm a white chip wonder. And a lot of stuff has happened after that. And I don't have time really to talk about it right now. I've probably gone through the hour, right? What am I?
You still have 5 minutes.
I have 5 minutes? 5 minutes to go through 40 years. Give me 10 minutes, I'll do it. I had these terrible sponsors. My first sponsor comes to my office. I'm sitting in my office. I'm 3 months sober. He looks up at the wall. I've got literally 30 plaques and diplomas and degrees from, I can't even explain it to you, testifying I've been educated far beyond my capacity to understand anything, you know? I was supposed to be sponsored by Albert Einstein or Jesus Christ. They weren't available. They stuck me with a used car salesman from Chicago who didn't even graduate elementary school. Go figure. But unfortunately, by the time I had gotten here, I had only 2 neurons working, and they were waving goodbye to each other, so I didn't know any difference. You know what I mean? So I'm sitting there, and he comes in. He's sitting in front of my desk, and I point to my diplomas, and I say, Bob, these are my degrees. And he looks at me, he says, well, you know, Russ, rectal thermometers have degrees, and you know what they do with those. He says, I'm not making this stuff up, you know. I mean, just, I didn't go through some AA joke book. This is what he says to me. You know, I could take another hour and tell you the stuff that he did and said to me. One time he told me, I told him I didn't think I had to go to meetings on Thursdays. He said, yeah, as long as you never drank on Thursdays. As I, he said, I figured it out. He said, Russ, you know as much about life as a dog knows about his father. And I'm sitting there. I'm literally sitting there. I'm trying to figure out what he's telling me because I thought he may have been complimenting me. I wasn't sure, you know. We're driving. I'm gonna end with this one thing, which usually takes me 15 minutes, and I'm gonna compress it into 3 minutes, okay, or 5 minutes. You know, I feel terrible. It's like Sophie's Choice. I'm gonna leave here. There's so many stories I'm not gonna tell you. I'm gonna feel bad about it, but I'm gonna do the best I can. You know what I mean? So I'm about a year sober. There's a guy named Bobby, and he's being sponsored by my sponsor. My first sponsor. And Bobby is a slipper. Bob is a guy, like, he gets 30 days together, he's doing good, and then all of a sudden he drinks. 30 days he drinks. As a matter, he'd even say, I'm coming upon that time again. I'm a 30, yeah, 30 days, you know, is my time. You know? I don't know what the deal is. But even I'm stark raving sober. I'm watching Bobby, you know what I mean? And every time he'd get drunk, he'd wind up in Bark up in Fort Lauderdale. We'd drive up there, we'd get him. Bob would set him up again, get him, give him a job, give him a little cash, take him to AA meetings. He did it over and over. We did it 6 times, 7 times, and I'd drive up with him, get Bobby. So like the 6th time, we're driving up there. And this is a story about alcoholism. And this is a story about recovery. And this is a story about the whole deal. Okay, so we're driving up there, and I'm feeling sorry for my sponsor, because I know he's got like 20 years, but he's like stupid. To be honest with you, I mean, he's really not bright. I mean, this guy is so full of crap. You understand? So I said, Bob, I said, this is crazy. We did this last month. We did it the month before. Did it the month before that. I mean, I'm a lawyer. I mean, I'm proving my case. Let me tell you something. I'm so right, I'm alky-right. If you don't agree with me, you got to die because you're so stupid. And I said, I got 3x5 cards. I got photographs. I got tape-recorded statements, you know. I got everything. I got police reports. I said, we did this last month. This guy is a phony. He's a loser. He doesn't give a crap about you. He's using you. He's using you. I'm going crazy. I mean, I'm like, let's lynch him. Let's kill him. And get him. And the hell with him. And he said, we got to turn this car around. And he let me keep on going on like that for 20 minutes, you know, repeating myself until I finally got tired. And he said, he looked at me and he said, are you done? And I said, yeah. Well, I wasn't, because now I had the lynch mob in my mind. Well, we got to kill him, you know. And man, I used to run around in my car with a machine gun. I've murdered so many people, women, children. You cross me, I kill your wife. I blow up. I mean, I'm like, got murder on my mind, you know? There ain't no probation for me. And, yeah, you're laughing. You don't know what it's like. But in any event, it's hard to live a peaceful life when you want to kill everybody. But in any event, so he says to me, he says, are you done? And I was still thinking. He says, are you done? He says, yeah. He says, no. Are you done? I said, yeah. He says, no, are you done? And I said, yeah, I'm done. Now, what's this guy going to say? Because I swear to God, I was right. He was a phony. He was full of crap. I was right. What could he say? What could this guy who never even graduated elementary school, used car salesman, say to this big shot lawyer? He said, Russ, listen. I said, what? He says, listen. He said, what? What? He said, listen. He said, what's he going to say to me? He looks at me, he says, Russell, it doesn't bother me like it bothers you. I look at him, I said, how could it not bother you? Everything bothers me, you know? You know, he used to have what I had. It was called alcoholism. You know what that is? That's alcoholism. 9 years later. 9 years later. Sponsoring people. Integral banquet chairman 2 years in a row. You know, group secretary, you know. Intergroup chairman. You go through whatever the service is, whatever the deal is, all the steps. Doing step series, teaching the steps. 9 years later. My lovely wife, the love of my life, you know, She, you know how she is, you know, I don't have to tell you, you know. I mean, she, we had an argument. She said something, disrespected me, whatever it is. It was, I'm going to tell you something. If I could only remember what it was, you would be so on my side. It would be unbelievable, you know. And I, because I was so right, you know. And I went up to my sponsor, Joe Snyder at the time, and I said, I'm getting a divorce. I said, that's it. I didn't sign up for this crap. I didn't sign up for this crap. And I explained to him in detail everything she did and everything she said. Now, I don't know about you, but I have the God-given gift that all alcoholics are given, where when I'm pissed off, I know exactly why I'm pissed off. I can tell the whole room. I can tell the entire earth. I know exactly what the problem is. You know what I mean? In detail. As a matter of fact, I can't wait to tell you the problem. I'll tell it to you over and over again. And I explained the whole thing to him. And I say, and so I didn't sign up for it. I'm getting divorced. It's over. You know? And he looks at me after I tell him everything. He says, and I was steaming. He says, do you know why you're upset? And I said, so what are you talking about? He says, you know why you're upset? I said, I just spent 20 minutes telling you why I'm upset. He said, that's not why you're upset. What are you talking? I said, I just told you what she did. And what he says, that's not why you're upset. I said, Bob, I just told you what she said and what she did, the exact thing. I mean, if there's anything I know, if there's anything an alcoholic knows, is why he's upset. You know? I mean, I have a God-given right. I know exactly. He says, that's not why you're upset. I said, that's not why I'm upset. He says, that's not why you're upset. He shut up. I said, that's not why you're upset. I said, yeah, that's not why you're upset. He didn't say anything. And so I look at him and I say, you know why I'm upset? He said, absolutely. Yeah, sure. I said, you know why I'm upset? Oh, yeah, it's easy. I said, yeah, he said, absolutely. I said, well, you're going to tell me why I'm upset? He says, I don't know. You really want to know? I said, wait, of course I want to know. Why am I upset? He said this. This is how he said it. He said, listen, stupid. He said, listen, stupid, you're upset because you're upsettable. I'm saying, what is this, like Zen AA or something, you know? Do you remember 9 years before that, my late sponsor, who was going through the same factual thing I was going through, and I was yelling and screaming, And I told him everything that I was upsetting me and why it was upsetting me. You remember what he said to me? He said, you're upset, I'm not. He says, it doesn't bother me like it bothers you. It's not the circumstance. He says, you don't have equanimity. He says, everything bothers you. Has nothing to do with the circumstances. Has everything to do with your spiritual condition. Because you haven't let go and you haven't let God in your life. And all I know is I've been married now 40 years, close to 40 years. You know, and she's pretty good most of the time. She gave me a foot rub tonight. I had to beg her to do it, you know what I mean? Just thought I wanted to throw that in, you know what I mean? And that's the deal. So God bless you. Thank you very much. Thank you, buddy.
Appreciate it.